Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. Today is May 9th, and I just want to remind you that next Thursday, the 15th, at 7 p.m. Eastern, we're going to be doing a live Q&A with Thaddeus Russell, and you can watch at schoolsucksproject.com/live. I'm going to be starting a thread today in the School Sucks Project group on Facebook to get organized for this event. So if you have a question you want me to ask or you want to call in with your own question, that would be a good thing to check out. You can find our Facebook group by searching the School Sucks Project on Facebook, or there's also links on the front page of our website. In the near future, you might be hearing some selections from our six-hour live show recorded last Friday, including today's show, where we talk about alternative and agorist education, and I contemplate joining a church. Stay tuned. Ooh. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the School Sucks live show. And I'm being joined by Osborne. Isn't that great?
It is great.
Thank you for coming.
Oh, thank you for letting me come. Much better than the last time where I was like banging outside on the door for 2 hours.
And I just insisted on...
Oh my God, what am I going to do? There's Osborne.
Yeah, that was weird. We're also being joined by Kirk. How you doing?
I am great. How about you guys?
I'm so glad you're back. The last time Kirk was on the show was episode 157. That was in August of 2012.
Oh my.
And the name of that show was Cognitive Bias and Memories of School. And we had a great after show that night, too, where we talked about the effects of porn on the brain of a man. When we counseled a listener who was having a hard time.
Did I miss that episode?
You were out of town.
Oh,
you were out of town.
That sounds like a conversation I would have enjoyed.
I think you would have enjoyed it very much. In fact, we're going to do a little experiment tonight because I just want to let people know what's going on. We're going to be broadcasting for a while.
Yep.
We've got access to a coffee pot, thanks to Carlos, who's sitting off mic right now, who now lives across the hall from the studio. Carlos Morales, who's been on the show before. So we have coffee. We have a toilet. We have, you know, if this turns into an all-night thing, there is, you know, I guess we can take turns in the bed. You only have one bed, but we could take turns. We can sleep in shifts. We can keep this thing going, you know. We'll see what happens. Things could get crazy. But right now we have Kirk. And, you know, for about 4 years, even long before you were on the show, I wanted to have you on as a guest to talk about something that you were doing called Informal University. So that's, you've been out of that for like 5 years.
Close to it, yeah.
So the reason why I wanted to discuss that with you tonight...
Actually, May 24th, it'll be 5 years.
Perhaps you could give us a smattering of your upcoming classes, just as an example of what you do.
We could absolutely do that. The whole idea behind the Informal University is to give what we call appetizer-sized classes.
Yeah.
So people can try things out and see if they like them without making an enormous commitment to, you know, semester-long thousands of dollars and that sort of thing.
Yeah,
we've got classes coming up on hydroponics. We've got classes coming up on how to maintain your blades, be those sword blades, knife blades, axe blades.
Mm-hmm.
Surprising how many people don't know how to take care of their blades. We have a regular bi-monthly gun cleaning class because, surprisingly enough, people don't know how to take their guns apart and clean them.
Mm-hmm.
We have a class coming up on counterinsurgency. We have a class coming up on sales and marketing techniques. We've got a regular writing class that occurs on Wednesday nights.
What kind of writing?
Creative writing.
Really?
Yeah, but we're working on a screenwriter's class as well.
So ooh, that's what we
need. I don't have the
dates
for that. Yeah. And then we have a regular monthly storyteller's night where it's sort of like an open mic night. Anybody can come up and tell their story any way they want to tell it. But we let people get up and tell stories. And
like their life story?
Whatever kind of story you want. Sometimes it's not necessarily your story, it's just the story you're telling. Some people use musical instruments to tell a story.
You should have a night where the theme is you have to get up and tell a story about the person sitting next to you.
That's a good idea. Yeah. The first time we did a storyteller's night, we kind of warmed up the whole room by starting a story and throwing it out so that I would tell two sentences of the story, and then I would point to somebody else in the room, and they had to pick up the thread and go from there, just to kind of loosen up the room and get everybody used to the fact that, guess what, you're going to be talking tonight. So
that's a very fun idea. How did that go?
It went really well. We had a smaller crowd than maybe I had hoped, but then again, it was the first time we did it.
Mm-hmm.
But gosh, we had people, a lot of people got up and told stories, and maybe not surprisingly, a lot of people got up and told a story, and then later on in the evening, they were like, oh, I've got another story. I want to tell another story.
Yeah.
So, because once you start hearing other people's stories too, and you start to...
You get excited.
Exactly. You get excited or more relaxed, depending on your particular demeanor. And you're like, oh, or
I can top that story.
Exactly.
So, yeah, that's very cool. And maybe as the hour goes on here, we can talk about some of these classes in more detail. I'm definitely interested in the counterinsurgency one, but I just want to make the differentiation between Informal U and Area 23. So Area 23 is just like the location where this goes on.
Right. When Kevin and I started the Informal University, it was all about alternative education and appetizer-sized classes.
Mm-hmm.
When we opened up Area 23, okay, so we did the Informal University at a variety of locations up until we opened up Area 23.
It was
usually shared space, you know, an office space that let us use their rooms in the evening or, you know, something like that. And then we had our eye on this one particular space because it was going to be big enough to let us do all the things that we wanted to do. And when it finally came available, we snagged it. And we needed a name for it, but we didn't want to call it the Informal University because we do other things at Area 23 too. So we wanted a name that just described the space and didn't necessarily describe all the things that took place within the space.
Sure. Sure. So how does it work? Oh, go ahead, Osborne.
How does Area 23 describe the space? Is that the apartment number or is that the...
Okay. So the number 23 is a prime number, right? But it's also important if you read... Some really it's 1800s mostly, but anarchistic philosophers like Stirner, Max Stirner, and they talk about prime numbers. They talk about chaos a lot and the fact that any prime number that also adds up to the number 5 was very important to them because
Discordianism.
Discordianism, and it's, you know, taking chaos but then using the number 5, which relates to the number of fingers in your hands, and kind of bringing order to your own chaos.
Yeah.
So
23 was this sort of magical number. Robert Anton Wilson wrote a lot. Sure. There's a great book. I recommend it if you're kind of like a spacey fruitcake type. Read Robert Anton Wilson. It's really interesting. I really like him. And I don't know if he's still alive. And I think he died, but he was a great writer, very interesting writer.
Yeah.
And there's a huge section in Cosmic Trigger about the number 23, the 23 skidoo, and all of these connections to the number 23.
Yeah. I think Amanda Billy Rock won't mind if I tease her a little bit on the show, but she came over and she was asking about Area 23, and I started explaining Discordian philosophy, and we started talking about German anarchism and blah, 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 and all this kind of stuff. And at one point she looked at Kevin and I and she goes, "You guys are way better read than you look." And I said, "You know what, Amanda, no matter how we looked, that would be the case."
So how does somebody come to be able to teach a class? Because, I mean, just so you know the larger picture of what I want to insert this into, I'm doing a series right now on agorism called Autonomy Through Agorism. The last couple shows have been about permaculture. So I've been interviewing this guy named Jamin in Western Pennsylvania. I see the opportunity to cover a lot of areas here. Jeff Berwick is probably going to come into it eventually. And he gave this speech about out of starting multi-million-dollar agorist business. There's a lot of different directions this can go in, but I feel like, you know, considering we are the School Sucks show, we should talk about education.
Sure.
You're right here. You've been doing it for a long time. You have a model that is working. How do you come to create these classes? What is the process for that?
Okay, so interestingly enough, the fact that we're in New Hampshire and the fact that there are a lot of participants from the Free State Project figures into the way we have this model set up. It's not necessary to the model, but it certainly helps because you have lots of people coming from lots of different backgrounds to a relatively small area. And part of what we do is we look around and we say, all right, who knows something that the rest of us don't know, or who is good at something that maybe the rest of us could use a little bit of help with.
Mm-hmm.
And if that person's interested in teaching a class, then we set it up and let them teach a class. there's some a little bit of interviewing involved to a certain extent. You know, who are you? Do you actually know what topic you're going to be talking about?
Yeah.
And from time to time, we have to say, I don't think that topic's really going to play. But in general, if people are enthusiastic about a topic and they're willing to teach, we can help them teach. We can help them put an outline together. And then we set a class fee. And what we've done since the very beginning is pretty much just split the fee 50-50 with the instructor. So both of us have an equal incentive to promote the class and to get good attendance there.
Yeah, that's a, so it's kind of like through the process, you're vetting them.
Right.
Right. Like you're going through an outline. All right. A couple of my first guests, like they're definitely within the first 10 guests I ever had on the show, were also free staters. And they also live right here in town, Alec and Daniel. And they had this site called Alec Keys, which was basically a similar kind of thing, but online, where somebody would establish, you know, their abilities and their merit as an instructor. And they would, you know, earn a higher status. And then people would come to them for that information. So I think that would be a question if somebody just heard about this for the first time. What's the vetting process like for?
Sure. It's multifaceted. Some people we know already. Some people we talk to or who are referred to us. One of the very first things that we do, though, and actually, Carlos, you and I talked about this earlier tonight. I said, I'm going to create the event, and then I want you to put the information in the event that tells us what you're going to talk about. So I'm putting that on you, and I want to see that take place. And if it takes place and it's not organized or it's incomplete, then I'll just pull that aside and say, okay, I can't tell what you're going to talk about, and we've already discussed it. So let's put some more form on this, or, you know, do we need some help creating an outline? And for you, you know, you come to me well-referred, and this is a talk you've done many times before, so that's not a big concern for me. But, you know, some other people, I'll say, why don't you send me a syllabus? Why don't you write up what it is that you want to see done? And we also try to put a little bit of that on the instructor in terms of, I'm going to do this thing, and then you're going to do that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't follow through with that next step, we start scrambling around pretty quick and going, okay.
You know, okay, has that
this
happened?
This is an equal, from time to time.
Have you had kind of more wacky things in your vetting process, like how to shield yourself from chemtrails?
No one has ever offered to teach that class.
Oh, that's too bad. I hear like spraying vinegar in the air is a really good way of
really
preventing the aluminum barium dioxide thingy.
Interesting.
They're shooting in the air. Yeah.
I just hide underneath the hydroponics table.
Yeah, you guys laugh. Fine. You know, okay. I want to talk about some of the classes. I want to hear about this counterinsurgency class.
Sure. Well, that gets started. I'm going to leave the name of the instructor out of it for our purposes here, because we call him Captain X, but he is an active duty serving member of the military, and counterinsurgency was what he taught the Joint Chiefs in Afghanistan. And he's teaching us the class as he taught it to the Joint Chiefs of Staff in Afghanistan.
So is there like a focus on a domestic counterinsurgency?
Not really, which is kind of interesting, because the principles of counterinsurgency are pretty much the principles wherever they are. You talk about social movements, you talk about the different phases of an insurgency, and you talk about, you know, a lot of these different things. It's interesting how many of the texts that we use for that class were written by people like Chairman Mao.
Mm-hmm.
So while we can certainly learn lessons here, you know, in the United States today by what has happened in the past and by the way that governments have tried to counter insurgencies in the past and where they've succeeded and where they failed, it's not specifically about today here in Manchester, New Hampshire, but the principles are fairly universal.
Do you worry about bringing something like that? Has there been any concern about any of this? Like, as far from an agorist point of view, are you worried about over publicity or anything like that?
Well, we'll continue to use that class as an example.
Yeah.
It is a class that is taught to the military today, and the manuals that are used to teach it are public manuals. You can get them on the web from the military's own website. You can download the PDFs.
Mm-hmm.
It's not secret. You know, it's not something that we're not allowed to talk about.
Right.
At least not yet, right? But it is something that when people hear about it, they go, ooh, counterinsurgency.
Yeah, it sounds, you know.
And it's a fun class. It's a good class. And it's one that, you know, the students do some projects. They get into their own little insurgencies and kind of do a deep dive into one that particularly interests them. So,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Does doing things like that, though, do you also get concerns? Because I believe the Free State Project was considered a domestic terrorist group.
Oh, yeah, that was there? Part of that's a good follow up to my question. Sure.
No one so far has directly expressed a concern about that to me. In fact, one evening while the counterinsurgency class was going on, we had an NPR reporter in the building who was interviewing people about Bitcoin. And she walked out of the Bitcoin interview and heard our instructor talking about counterinsurgency. And, you know, her alarm bells went off. And she's like, what are they talking about in there? And, you know, I said, go in, listen. You know, she's like, can I record anything? And I was like, if the class consents to being recorded, then you can record it. She's like, well, you know, isn't it secret? I'm like, no, there's nothing secret about this at all. You know, I mean, this is more freely available than many books today. You know, because you can just download the PDFs straight off the web.
Would she maybe meant is secret about the place, the location, the what's going on there?
It's not really secret either.
Okay.
Our stuff's pretty public. To clarify that, we're a private space where we hold private events. So we're not open to the public.
Yeah.
And this figures into your conversation about agorism, because there's agorism that is directly counter to many laws, whether they're state or municipal ordinances or whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
We're actually following almost every single one because we define ourselves as a private space, because our events are all, technically speaking, private events that we invite people to come to.
Yeah.
And we're not open to the public. So we don't fall under most of those local ordinances and things like that. But we do that deliberately. And one thing that Kevin and I have always done from the very beginning of our business is to look at the law the way it exists and not really try to, rather than try to go directly against it, we try to jujitsu it. If that makes sense.
I that absolutely makes sense. And I had a conversation with Ben Stone recently, and he said, you know, don't always think about agorism as like an act of protest. It isn't, you know, like maybe civil disobedience or maybe even some political action could be, you know, an act of protest. But agorism is just about ignoring the state. But you're also trying to run a business, right?
Sure.
So you want to stay in business, and that's the trick.
And you have to advertise to a certain extent if you're going to stay in business.
Or yeah.
You can have these great classes, but if nobody shows up, then that becomes problematic.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just like, it's smart. I had this situation recently where it was like the very beginning of the month, I was trying to get health insurance, right? Mm-hmm. And I called, like, I talked to somebody like a couple weeks before from some company, and they said, oh, you know, do it before the 31st because the rates go up then. And, you know, things got busy. I was traveling. I came back. It was like April 2nd. And I called and they said, we can't sell health insurance. You know, because at first I was like, that's insane. A man can't buy health insurance from a private company in this country, you know, on April 2nd. And I just said, well, I know the predators that are out there. You know, like if anybody knows what hunts in this area,
right.
It should be me, you know, so I can only blame myself. And I should have known better. So, I mean, I think that people who are sticking their neck out so much, like, here, catch me, catch me, catch me. And then they get caught and they go, what did I do? I can't believe this is happening. You know, that's kind of silly looking.
Oh, yeah. We sat down with an attorney and talked to several business people who have operated in the Manchester area for a long time. Because attorneys don't know everything, although ours is pretty smart. And just said, you know, what do we need to be careful of? What should we look out for? What are people going to be looking out for when they notice that we are doing things here?
Yeah.
You know, and we establish some guidelines and we stick to them.
So, yeah. Okay. So I think that we can call something agorism if it's operating outside of the system. You're not accredited.
Nope.
Okay. But we map the terrain. Mm-hmm. We mark off where the predators are and we move forward. And instead of just saying, it's my dream, you know, to do this, so everything be damned, which is, I guess, kind of like what I do to a certain extent, but I'm somewhat cautious about it, but I don't have the same kind of risks involved. I mean, you have capital not only in the place, but there's probably valuable stuff there. Like, I'm kind of on the move, you know, it's a different sort of situation where if you actually have, you know, a brick and mortar location, you have to take precautions that maybe other people don't have to take.
Sure, sure. There's a certain amount of that. And I think it's interesting. A lot of people think of agorism or anarchy as being just completely free and easy and doing whatever it is you want to do. But in a very real way, you have to bring some discipline to it if you're going to keep doing it over any extended period of time.
Yeah.
And maybe that discipline is just that you say to yourself, I'm going to get up and spend 3 hours working on my agorist business today, even though I don't have to go into an office or report to a boss or something like that. But if you don't spend some time and put in some sweat equity and some intellectual work, then
yeah,
it's not going to come together. It's not going to happen. So being an agorist or being an anarchist doesn't mean that you can operate without discipline. It's just self-discipline.
Absolutely. So I want to talk more about some of the other classes.
Sure.
A little bit.
What's a class you would like to take?
I would be very interested in a screenwriting class.
Yeah?
Yeah. A digital filmmaking class would be great.
Yeah.
I think. What's something else that you were excited about recently?
You know, it's interesting. We started doing the gun cleaning thing because I saw so many people not doing a good job maintaining their firearms.
Yeah.
And a lot of people move to New Hampshire and they're like, yay, I can finally buy a gun. And they buy a gun and they buy a cheap nylon holster and they wear it around on their hip for a little while and then they forget about it. Maybe they go shoot it a little bit or something like that, but they don't really learn how to use it and how to take it apart. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's kind of an important
feature. Are we talking just as field stripping or like full on teardown?
Well, I'd be content with field stripping in the most part. I mean, full-on teardown is awesome, but in most cases, field stripping is all you really need to be able to do.
Sure.
And while we have people who are better at doing this with particular guns, we don't have necessarily somebody on our gun cleaning night who is an expert at all guns.
Mm.
What we have is a bunch of people who bring their firearms, and they come together. We take all the ammunition and put it to the side so that there are no accidents. We double check all the barrels and magazine wells and things like that, make sure all the guns are safe, and then put everything out on the table and start cleaning guns. And sometimes you'll have someone say, all right, I have no idea what to do with this one.
Wow.
And sometimes it's a gun none of us have ever seen before, but there's this wonderful thing called YouTube.
Mm.
And, you know, while one person might get nervous taking their gun apart with just a YouTube video, because they're like, what if there's a spring and I don't know where it goes again? Or what if I miss something? When you get two or three other people around all watching the same thing with different skill sets, some of whom have disassembled their own firearms just fine, they just don't know about this particular one, then suddenly you sort of get this aggregate intelligence in the room, and we've never had one that we couldn't put back together again, and they all come away cleaner at the end of the night.
Awesome.
And then we all wind up learning each other's guns too. So, you know, there are things I know now about cleaning Kel-Tex that I never would have known, because I don't own any Kel-Tex. So.
Yeah, yeah.
I got one in my pocket.
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
It's a little cute one.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah, it's green.
It's adorable.
Yeah, I don't even know how to take this apart. I imagine you push this pin out.
Yep, pretty much.
Okay, so that was our first gun on the show.
Was it?
Yeah. Hope you enjoyed that, everyone watching.
Oh, so what I was going I was going to say after that was, so we're doing this, and we started doing it about almost every week because people were enjoying getting together and doing it. It becomes a social time and a learning time. And then someone said, what about knife sharpening? I've got this knife, and I don't really know how to keep an edge on it. You know, so
if I brought in my kitchen knives to this class, we would sharpen them?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Because they just sit on the counter, and I never use them because they've gotten dull. And I never.
And there's all kinds of knives. There's knives that you want to tip on. There's knives you want an edge on. So now we're starting to alternate gun cleaning night and blade night.
One of the things I thought was so great about this, it's doing education outside of the system, but it's also largely about self-sufficiency, you know, which that speaks to perfect. I mean, all of those things, you know, because there is a lot of stuff to know and keep track of in this world. You know, for us, I mean, people who want to be more self-sufficient and do more things outside of the system, and, you know, all of these more recreational skills as well. So that's, I'm really excited about this. I really need to get over there. I've never been involved in this in any way. So, except for just a distant excitement about it. I'm glad that it's going on.
Hey, come drop into a couple classes, bring a recorder, and we'll make some sound bites for your show.
That would be fun. Well, also, I guess we could also take calls. It's 843-JOIN-SSP. Skype in School Sucks Live. If you're bored, send us Bitcoin. The QR code is right on the screen.
Oh, do we have people in the chat?
No, there's quite a few.
Oh,
people,
very nice.
Looks like they're talking.
Very nice.
So, are there questions? Let's see what people say. Somebody says, I like the gun cleaning. So that was a success.
Yeah.
Good.
It's a nice way to learn about other people's firearms, somebody says. So, hey, throw a question at us. We'll take your questions. We'll take your calls. Get involved. All right. So back to the informal you discussion. So what's the plans for the future here?
All right. So when we started out, we thought we were going to sublet a lot of office space, sort of take care of our overhead. And we do have one sort of a cornerstone sublettee. She is absolutely fabulous, and we love having her there. But it's turned out that we actually need most of the space for classes, so we really haven't been renting out the office space. Although we have, from time to time, rented office space during the day for a period of like a week or so for someone who was trying to get a business off the ground, and they needed a place to meet that wasn't a coffee shop or a bar or something like that. Or they needed essentially to rent a conference room so that they could meet with clients or something along those lines.
How much space do you have?
Total, 4,500 square feet.
That's like a mansion.
Yeah, that's a warehouse floor.
That's awesome.
So, and we've got it subdivided into several different rooms. And, I mean, got a lot of stuff there. We have a weight room there.
It's also right next to the cigar smoking lounge.
Wow.
So that, where else can you go to exercise where you get to breathe smoke?
When you think about education. Education.
Nowhere.
Right. Education isn't just about what goes on inside your head. It's about your whole body, right?
Mm-hmm.
And whether it is learning to properly care for your tools, like how to sharpen your knives, or whether it's learning how to properly care for your body, we've had cooking classes, we've had weight training classes, we've had martial arts classes, yoga classes. We've got somebody who pretty regularly comes and does. I'm going to horribly mangle the Chinese pronunciation of quinoa, but it's Chinese orthopedic massage, essentially.
Yeah, you can say quinoa.
I guess you can.
Oh, wait, no, that's food. That's food. Okay, yeah. I'm sorry. You said quinoa.
I think of it as a hell of a back rub.
Okay.
When I said I was going to mangle it, I was not kidding. I mangled it.
All right. On an unrelated note, if you ever hear anyone say quinoa, just look them in the eye and say quinoa. It's fun. Very cool. What kind of cooking?
Let's see. There's been meat preservation classes, canning classes, lacto-fermentation classes. We've had a couple people come in and do like demonstrations for how they prepare their barbecue or how they prepare a certain kind of food. So,
what do you think of that? You're a big barbecue guy, Osborne.
I'm skeptical.
You should be skeptical about the barbecue at this point because it's not like we have open flame going on
right there.
But, you know, talking about different marinating techniques.
Where was this person from who did the class?
This person is a chef, actually.
From where?
From New York.
New York barbecue?
No.
This is the genetic fallacy.
Yeah. This is more talking about the different cuts of meat and what they can be used for in different types of barbecue.
All right. I can get along.
And I would love to get somebody in there who actually knows how to do butchering to, you know, bring a half a cow in and show us how to take it apart.
Oh, yeah. Or homeless people.
Sure.
And like harvest organs and what have you.
What? Man, that just got really, you know, a nice, serious, constructive show just got really dark, I think. Explain yourself. What does that mean?
Well, I think he's talking about medical experiments.
Yeah, like, because
and we have done some
money,
medical
right?
experiments, but not involving homeless people.
But you have to exercise proper technique when removing them. I mean, you can't just go in there not knowing what you're doing with a spoon.
Never go in with a spoon.
No.
You know?
Right.
Depends on how
and
sharp the spoon is.
If you accidentally hit the spoon, then you're going to have all that bile,
yeah.
too. It's going
right,
to spoil
right.
the whole thing.
Yeah. You
have to properly preserve them, right? I mean, I don't know.
Sure.
I don't know anything about this, right? But I imagine you have to like put it in some kind of bucket with ice, at least.
Wow.
Right?
But then the ice is going to melt, and you're going to get a bunch of water in your body cavities. That doesn't make sense.
This just got after show real quick. So do we?
Although that does remind me of something that I don't know why I didn't think about this when you were talking about medical insurance. We had a whole Saturday where we had health screenings there.
Yeah.
By donation only, where we had we had a nurse come in, and you know, she was equipped to do, you know, basic health screening, so people could come in and get their, you know, cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, you know, heart rate checked out, ask her any questions that they needed to ask. As a nurse, she's not allowed to, I make the air quotes, diagnose anything, but she was able to say, gosh, this number seems high. Maybe you should talk to somebody about that.
Yeah. Sure.
So, again, playing around with, we can get away with this thing, but we have to say it this way. But if we can't do the other thing this way, or we're breaking some laws. And
sure. Yeah, I just think this is the greatest thing. I'm glad we finally got a chance to talk about it. I feel like we could talk more. I know you're kind of limited for time. How do you promote this, since you're now sitting in a place where you have an opportunity to promote this? You'll be able to do it here. But outside of something like this, how do you go about raising awareness, getting people in? And I also, I do, before we wrap up, since we got, I think, about 15 minutes left, I want to talk about how this could be replicated somewhere else.
Sure.
So first of all, let's talk about promotion, and then let's talk about replication.
Well, to be honest, I'm still figuring out promotion. I don't feel like I've got it down pat yet. The easiest and first thing that we do is we talk about it whenever we can talk about it. We promote right now online primarily through Facebook, but that's partly because we want to send invitations to our private events, and Facebook is a very easy mechanism for doing that. We're playing around with some ways that we can write those invitations or write those events directly to a website, but we haven't figured out all the ins and outs of that yet. And we don't want to go too fast, because it's important to us that we be able to invite people to events rather than just say, hey, here's a calendar.
Right.
So, yeah. Which goes back to the self-discipline element of that. We also try to branch out and talk to other groups. This isn't just a Porcupine Venture, and we have other groups come in that want to hold meetings or want to do things. We've had private parties for other groups as well. Because, you know, you don't have to be a free stater. You don't have to be an anarchist to start having this creepy sensation that maybe there's just a little too much government out there. And there are a lot of people out there who we want to reach out to, because maybe they just feel like there's too much government in one area of their life. But if they can find a place to express that and start doing something about it, then they're much better off, and they can start to think about other areas and other ways that maybe that might be the case.
Absolutely. And that kind of segues into the replication question. I mean, the first thing I would ask is, what kind of attendance or interest have you gotten from people who are outside of the Free State?
You know, it's interesting when we have a group come in, and sometimes it's just like for a dinner party.
Yeah.
Or to take a class that they've been looking for a place to hold a class, and they found out about us through a mutual friend, and they're like, oh, you know, we can do this class at your place. They come we have one hall in the space where we've let people just put up whatever kind of posters they want to put up. So there tend to be a lot of Ron Paul posters, and there's some Free State Project posters. There's some posters from campaigns that people have participated in here. But then there are also just some concert posters and, you know, other fun stuff like that. And you'll get people who come in and they say, you know, what's with that Ron Paul poster over there? You know, it's right next to that other poster, you know, from, I'm sure you guys know Hardy, who died last year. But he ran for office several times, and many times the primary thing in his campaign was medical marijuana. And giving people more access to marijuana. So there's one handmade cloth poster that says Party Hardy, and all of the, you know, all the spaces in the letters look like little marijuana leaves. And they're like, what is that doing there? And why is that next to the, you know, the come and take it flag with the AR-15 on it?
Yeah, those are different sides of the earth.
For a lot of people, they look at that and they're like, this is, you know, what's going on here?
Yeah.
You know, what's different about that? And so by asking them questions and kind of taking I'm going to say that we take a Socratic approach to evangelism.
Okay.
In that instead of just trying to pump our way of thinking, we try to ask questions that get people questioning why it is that they have the sort of dividing lines in their minds that they do, whether it's, you know, red, blue, or statist or anarchist or whatever like this. To try to get people thinking, wait a minute, we're all just here trying to be the best people we can be, right?
Yeah.
And have some fun and learn some things. So why do we insist on putting barriers up between ourselves or creating barriers through government to do that? Why don't we just let ourselves operate to the best of our ability instead of creating all these giant speed bumps that we have today?
Absolutely. So. Well, other people are certainly benefiting from that practice as well, those divisions. You know, I mean, as far also on the topic of replicating, can we just go back to like where you guys started and how you started years ago with Informal Sure. U?
Kevin and I were sitting around trying to figure out what we really wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
He was still brewing a lot at the time, and he still brews some. He teaches home brewing classes.
Yeah.
I was working a tech job in the day and a security job at night to try to, put all the pieces of the puzzle together.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about starting a church. We talked about starting a school. I have a little bit of a background in education. He's taught classes before, fencing among other things. And we just put all these ideas in one pot, and that's where we came up with the Informal University.
How did you implement it originally?
We started working with Kate Baker in her school out in Hooksett at the time.
Sure. Yeah, I was involved with that for a while.
So we started doing some classes in the evenings and the weekends at the space that she had.
Right.
And they were successful. The school didn't work out for her, and the Hooksett location wasn't really working out for us.
Right.
So we had to part ways and move to other locations and do things a little bit differently. But that's where the first Informal University classes were held, were at Kate's school there in Hooksett. So,
cool.
Yeah. Also where the first Church of the Sword services were held.
Now, let's finish up with that. Let's talk about that a little bit. Because sure. Is that something we can talk about?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. So what is the Church of the Sword?
Church of the Sword is a church. We started a church. It's very ecumenical in terms of what you can believe to be a member of the Church of the Sword.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but one of the things that we all believe in is self-sufficiency, mm-hmm. but helping each other become more self-sufficient.
Very good. Very connected to what we've been talking about. Oh, yeah. Now, why? What are the benefits of doing this, though?
What are the benefits of doing what?
Of starting a church. They're numerous, as I understand.
Sure. There's all kinds of, again, this comes to doing a little jujitsu with the legal system and mm-hmm. the way that laws are set up today. But churches have certain benefits, and there's certain things that you can do as a church or that you can do in association with a church that it's, frankly, a little bit more difficult to do if you're not. So we filed as a church here in New Hampshire close to 5 years ago now, and actually the Informal University is the education ministry of the Church of the Sword. It's a DBA of the Church of the Sword.
Ah.
So.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Do you have a doctrinal statement?
We do, and I'm not going to be able to reel it off to you right this second.
Okay. All right. Do you have an abstract nutshell?
Yeah, it's that we believe that people of all faiths can get together and believe that they have a right to be and that they have a right to learn and become more self-sufficient, and that that process is speeded up by cooperating with each other towards those goals. I can pull it up from our Facebook page if you want me to read it more.
So if someone were to want to start a church, what are the what do you have to have to call yourself a church? Is it a certain number of members? Is it a certain number of meetings? Is it certain things about your meeting?
To start is actually fairly easy. You need a statement of purpose, and here in New Hampshire, you just have to file some paperwork with the state that says we're a church. To continue to be a church and to continue to be recognized as a church, one of the first things that, let's say that you said, let's say that Bob wants to start a church, and the main reason he wants to start a church is to avoid property taxes and to, to get a few little extra perks and privileges that you might be able to get as a church. Mm. And he could file his paperwork, but one of the first things, if that paperwork ever comes into question, or that his status as a church is going to come into question, is that the people who are asking questions are going to say, well, how often do you meet, and what's your order of service like? And if the members of Bob's church can't articulate how often they meet or what the order of service is, then Bob is going to find himself in hot water. But that's one of the, it's just one of the things that happens when a church is being investigated that way. And it's not even necessarily a formal investigation. Your members need to be able to articulate what the church is about and what happens when you go to a service. It's not like we all meet in Bob's basement, drink a couple beers and talk about the Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there needs to be an order of service and things you do and why you do these things. There needs to be a reason behind them.
What is the order of service for Church of the Sword?
Well, for the Church of the Sword, we start off with a ritual of combat where we sword fight. It's a combination of fencing and épée. We usually use boffer swords because they require very little protective equipment.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes we use shinai. And then after...
What's a shinai?
A shinai is a bamboo sword, like a Japanese sword.
Okay.
So for that, you're going to want to wear gloves and goggles at the very least because they are made of bamboo and they like to pinch the skin on your wrists when you get hit with them. Sure. And take the skin off. And they will fit in an eye socket. Whereas our boffer swords are made with tennis balls on the end of them so that they won't fit in your eye socket. We have broken several pairs of glasses, but we have never put anybody's eye out yet.
So that's
Is there instruction associated with the ritual of combat?
Okay. If it's your first time, we'll give you some basic instruction. We do often have sword fighting classes on Wednesday nights at Area 23. So if somebody wants to practice and get a little bit better, it's also pretty good exercise, quite frankly, and more fun sometimes than just sitting on the treadmill for, you know, an hour or something like that to actually do some sword fighting. You know? And you may walk away with some bruises on your ribs or your forearms, but that's about it.
How long does the ritual of combat last?
It lasts until we're done with it. So usually somewhere between 30 to 45 minutes.
Mm.
And it's sort of a round robin. We play, for church, we do a one touch version. So both people who are sword fighting can lose, but only one can win. And it's a bit of an honor system. When you get touched by the other person's sword, then you're supposed to say that you've been touched and you're out. And then you pass your sword to somebody else. They go right back in and fight the winner. And we just keep going until people are sweaty and tired and ready for the next ritual, which is the ritual of disobedience.
The ritual of disobedience. What's that?
Yep. Well, one of the people that we used for our sort of foundational philosophy is Max Stirner. And Max Stirner was certainly not the only person who said this. But one of the things that he said is that you should disobey the law because it's the law.
Hmm.
And we came up with the ritual disobedience when we got together to start the church. We met at this park in Concord. And after we had sat down and lit our cigars and had a drink and started talking about things, we looked around and we noticed there were signs in the park that said no alcohol, no tobacco, and no firearms. And we said, oh, well. And I think it was Kevin who said, hey, we could make this one of the rituals. So we did. I won't go into extreme detail about the ritual of disobedience, but suffice it to say that we deliberately break some laws.
Sure.
For the ritual of disobedience. So, and then we have the rants and the readings.
Is it the same every time? Or is
it's the same every time. Right. Yeah. Then we have the rants and the readings. We don't do sermons. Anybody can get up and read something that has struck them in the past week as something that was significant or important, or they can get up and rant about something that has tweaked them just a little bit. Or
nice.
Usually announcements get incorporated in there. You know, the people who are attending church will tell us if there's something big going on in their lives or something like that. And that's another reason that we started the church, because we're talking about a community of people that at the time that we founded the Church of the Sword was about 500 or 600. But that number has doubled in the past period of time. And there's no way that I can stay in touch with 12 to 1500 people on a weekly basis. But I can definitely stay in touch with the 20 to 30 who show up every week at Church of the Sword. And between them, they have managed to be in touch with 10 or 12 other people that I am not in contact with. So if something's going on in the community that we need to know about or that we could help out with, or you know, somebody's looking for a job or somebody's looking for an apartment, things get announced then and the word gets passed around. So
awesome.
It's an important community building sort of point in there. And then we do probably the only ritual that we've borrowed from most mainstream churches, the begging for money. Although we do it as a 50-50 raffle where people can buy a raffle ticket for $1 and the winner keeps half the pot. So
awesome.
Yeah. And then we have the ritual of pie.
Which is pie.
It's pie. P-I-E. Exactly.
I-E.
Yes. Although we often incorporate the mathematical pie in our rants, in our readings, and in the way that we talk about the circular nature of things. So, But the way that we explain the ritual of Pi is that other religions often talk about how long ago in the past, before our ancestors were bad and evil, there was Pi. And then some other religions talk about how if you're good and you follow all these rules handed down from invisible people, there will be pie in the sky when you die. But at Church of the Sword, we have pie today.
The reason why I wanted to go into a little bit of detail about that is when we're talking about, you know, self-sufficiency and agorism, community and networks are very important, and this is a great way to establish them. And it also works very well with the educational piece of it.
Sure.
So, well,
and you've got people moving here from all parts of the country. They're leaving friends. They're leaving family. They're coming here, and we wanted to build something that people could tap into if they wanted to. But, of course, it's completely voluntary. You don't have to tap into it if you don't want to.
So. Right. Absolutely.
Are you staying here for the weekend?
Where? Like here?
Like here at my house or wherever?
Yeah, I'll stay at your house.
Should we go to Church of the Sword on Sunday?
Yeah. Yeah, I think. What time does it go till?
11 o'clock, and it runs until, I don't know, usually 12:30 or 1.
Let's do
it. That sounds like fun.
Have you ever been?
No.
We will be there.
Awesome.
What should I wear?
Whatever you want to wear. Something you can sword fight in.
It sounds sweaty. Yeah, probably.
Okay.
Jeans and t-shirts tend to be, you know, pretty comfortable.
Uh-oh, Osborne. You don't wear those things.
No.
What are you going to wear? My goodness.
I don't know. I have to pick out an outfit.
We can go to Savers thrift store, get you some sweats.
I do have plenty of t-shirts. They're more for decoration.
Wear whatever you want to. Just something you can move around in.
Something that's comfortable we can move around in. Yeah, we'll be there. That sounds great.
Right on. Awesome.
So if people wanted to learn more, whether they're planning to move to New Hampshire for the Free State Project, or we do have some listeners, I guess, who are already here and they might not know about it because they might be in Keene or Portsmouth or somewhere else. Where can people go online to get more information about Informal U and Church of the Sword?
Sure. If you go to informalu.org, you will find an outdated list of classes, but you'll also find a link to our email. If you're on Facebook, you can look for the Informal University, or you can look for Area 23.
Awesome. So thank you so much for coming on
Absolutely.
The show.
Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. So you are listening to the School Sucks and watching, perhaps, the School Sucks live show. We are going to take a little break.
Sure.
Say 5-10 minutes.
Right.
We're going to come back with about 2 free hours before we have our next guest scheduled. So Carlos is going to join us on the third mic. And from there, we would love to take your calls. I'm going to switch Skype accounts during the break, and we'll get you on the show. 843-JOIN-SSP, Skype in School Sucks Live, right around 6:05, we'll say. We'll be back.